All right, you're back in the DFSR, and we're here with our NFL podcast for Tuesday, September 13th. I am Doug Norrie. That is
James Davis.
And buddy, we made it. We made it through week one alive.
Yeah. I forgot how crazy football is compared to stupid baseball, where, you know, stuff is just happening nonstop. And it's not like baseball where you're like, when's the next time Curtis Granderson's going to come up? Let's see. It's just like nonstop touchdowns, texts off the hook, but fun. I feel alive again.
Oh, yeah. Well, it's so funny, too. I kind of have forgotten, too. I mean, look, we've been watching football our whole life, so I haven't, like, forgotten what it's like. But I've forgotten what it's like to just not have things go your way early, kind of. You're like, well, there's been four touchdowns, and I didn't have any part of it. And so this day's sunk, on to next week, right? And so you start thinking, and then just like, you just forget that there's just, you know, three quarters of all the games left to go. And it could just be really difficult watching experience, especially if you're watching on multiple televisions or like just on the Red Zone channel, and they just continue to flash the things that don't have anything to do with, you know, lineups that you've put together. So,
or way worse, they flash like, let's go down to Atlanta, figure out what's going on here. It's a passing touchdown for Mohamed Sanu.
that's
not exciting at all.
Well, I think actually, you sent the text at sometime around like 1:45 Eastern on Sunday, and it was just like Julio Jones 15 question marks or something like that. And I was like, I'm with you, buddy. He's on the field. So that's so good news. Good news, bad news. He's on the field. Bad news is they just don't seem inclined to look his way. I mean, he kind of turned it around, but it was one of those things, right? So like, it seems like Julio Jones early on in the game is going to dust off all of our cash games, because that's where we had him pretty much in every place he was eligible for cash. The system had him, you know, I think correctly, and he doesn't do anything, and then kind of makes up for near the end by getting in a touchdown on a little it was kind of like a bubble screeny pass to him. But he gets into the end zone, sort of making up the difference on him. But yeah, football's tough when it comes to stuff like that. It's just hard. It's hard to weather it. It's hard to feel like you're not losing all the time when you don't have a piece of those first couple touchdowns. And yeah, it's just a different kind of sweat. I enjoyed it, you know, even for the parts where I wasn't enjoying it so much. Sure. But overall, our system was basically great this weekend. I'm very, very encouraged about, you know, the way we had projected players, of the volume we had on certain players. There's a couple guys that I wouldn't say we missed on, but we'll discuss sort of what happened with them. But overall, for the whole weekend, if you played basically all the different slates that were available, which I was in the chat room, I know I'm kind of filibustering here, but I was in the chat room early on Sunday saying, you know, my recommendation for this slate is to spread your money pretty evenly between all the different slates, the 1 p.m. only, the main, blah, 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 4 p.m., all those, because it's going to give you a natural piece of all the different kinds of value without feeling like you need to overextend incorrectly in certain places. And if you did that, you're looking at a profitable weekend through our system, and I'm really encouraged by sort of what happened there.
Yeah, I think that's right. I think that it's probably worth jumping into some specific things we learned for the week, but yeah. I think one thing that we learn, you know, every football season kind of is that it's really a sport unlike any other, in that spreading yourself out across different slates can oftentimes really give you the kind of hedging that you want, really good natural hedging, instead of, you know, arbitrarily putting in bad players. Because the temptation is just to run 1,000 different iterations for one big slate in football. But since there's only really one main slate per week, that, you know, I think a much more profitable way to do that is to spread that. So I'm with you.
And the hardest part about that, and this is really just about, you know, this is about more bankroll stuff in general, but the hardest part is that the main slates, in this case for FanDuel, it was the main slate was, you know, Sunday 1 p.m. through Monday games. And then for DraftKings, it was a little different. It was just Sunday games because they wanted to clear away that million Sunday night. But the only issue there is it's just much easier to get money in on those big slates because the contests are so much bigger. So like you can, you know, mass join double ups, you can, yep. you get, it's just, there's just more contests available. So that's the only issue. It's just more time consuming to try to get the money in on the smaller ones, because yeah, you just need to, the contest just don't allow for multiple entry for whatever reason. And that's really the only thing that kind of stopped me from doing it. So the main slate, where we were a little different, this was going back a little bit and just looking sort of, you know, what was good, what wasn't. You know, the good things, D'Angelo Williams ends up being the play of the day. He was a guy that was in every single lineup for us. Any slate that he was available, he was in the lineup for us. It was kind of hard waiting on his production because you sort of looked at the landscape and you had zeros from him before the game started. It was tough to know what his ownership was going to be, and it was also tough to know how many points the cash lines were going to move on Monday. He played about as good as one can play, and ends up being pretty much the play of the day.
Yeah, I think it's worth pointing out right now, like when we're going into week one, very, very hard to project usage and, you know, targets and all those sorts of things because teams makeup change up, you know, different quarterbacks, whatever. One of the ways we can get safety, and by the way, I think that we'll talk about hopefully a bunch of players today who had sort of breakout weeks or breakout disappearances sort of, but Williams is a guy we've actually seen in this exact role. We were projecting him for lots of touches in this game. I think we projected him for more touches than anyone else in the NFL last week.
Yeah, and we did. I'm pretty sure.
It wound up bearing out exactly that way. Yep. So I think that, you know, I don't want to pat ourselves on the back too much. We did miss a handful of guys, but I think that it's definitely, like, if you're looking at him, like, was that a fluke? You know, was it just a good matchup? I do not think so. I think that he's still very, very affordable across the different sites. He's only 7,600 on FanDuel now, so I think he'll probably be a chalk play against Cincinnati next week. But he's a running back one. There's no doubt about it until Le'Veon Bell comes back.
He scores a garbage time touchdown, which really pushed the performance. I'm saying garbage time because the game was essentially over at that point, and they were just kind of running the clock out. And he scores. That was what's pretty much sealed all of our cash games, which was nice. Now, when we talked about we had him, and we had, you know, guys like Antonio Brown, Julio Jones was a guy. Our lineups had Dak, who doesn't really get the job done though. He doesn't kill you because of price. Ends up being a pretty chalky play. One player that we sort of missed on, and I'm putting missed in quotes because he was really high in terms of points per dollar for us. He just missed getting into optimal lineups on the main slate, and that was Spencer Ware. So Spencer Ware ends up becoming a chalk play. Talk about our concerns with him going in and whether or not, you know, in retrospect, do you think we were correct, incorrect? He was great. So, but let's just talk about our process going into that, and then how we saw the game sort of play out.
Well, I think our process going in was pretty solid. I mean, we saw the situation as one where Ware was going to split time with a bunch of different players. Charles being ruled out Sunday morning, I think, made a lot of people really bullish on Ware's opportunity for this game. We saw that news and still kind of felt like West and maybe Niall Davis were going to take some carries away. And Ware had never been featured actually in regular playing time in the passing game, so we were a little concerned there. I think ultimately the game script played out in such a way that the Kansas City really couldn't run the ball hardly at all. So given the way they actually did run when they could, it looks like Ware was probably going to exceed the total touches that we had him in place for. And obviously the 7 receptions is way more than we thought. And right. We also didn't anticipate he would get 18 yards per catch. So, and hopefully nobody did. I think the miss there, if you want to call it a miss, is on the price point for Ware, he was still so affordable. And the situation was as clear as some other ones like Christian Michaels or, you know, maybe Dak Prescott or, you know, other guys, really, really cheap guys, that on a normal week where there weren't such other good cheap options, he probably would have been a play anyway. But given the uncertainty, we just picked other guys. And so, you know, it obviously didn't work out this week. But like you mentioned, for the main slate, we did have him on the early slate. On the same token, though, if he's only going to get 18 touches, I'll take the under on 30 fantasy points.
Well, see, it's funny because you mentioned the game script, and that right when San Diego goes up 2 touchdowns, and I'm thinking, oh my God, we nailed it. Ware's not going to touch the ball.
San Diego was up 21-3.
Right, right. So at some point, now again, that is not something you could predict because Kansas City was heavily favored in this game going in, or like they're like -6 or something. So it's not like you can pencil them in for being down and having Ware come out. So we get a little, like, I would say, quote, right, lucky when it comes to.
I think we get lucky on the game script and probably maybe made a bad call.
I think so too. And I'm with you. Now, I'm with you though. We talked about this forever. You know, there was news, the piece, maybe this could be the last piece we say about it, but the news was, Andy Reid comes out early after Charles is ruled out and says all 3 guys are going to play. And that was actually the thing to me that made me want to just take a note of caution on him, because it just struck me as this exact wrong situation where if they're going to rotate it even like, you know, 60-20-20 or something like that percentage wise of touches, and that's just not going to be enough for Ware even at 5,100. And so anyway, we end up kind of missing there by a couple percentage points, and he was chalk. It ends up playing out fine in the end, but you know, we want to celebrate the things that we think went well, and we also want to just be honest about the things and, you know, our process going into each guy. Right. Other things to mention that come out of week one, you know, things are not all news considered equally, but one piece is RG3 is out now. He looked so bad against the Eagles. No great real loss for the Browns, possibly a net gain. They're going to bring Josh McCown back in. We had on the podcast last week, we did a no halftime challenge between Gary Barnage and Rob Gronkowski. And I took the it was so funny because I took the Barnage side, and then, you know, and
I
then,
took the Barnage side, didn't you?
No, you took Gronk. And so I took Barnage straight up over Gronk, and then I'm like, Gronk gets rolled out. I'm like, well, it would have gotten pushed anyway because Gronk wasn't going to play. And then Barnage somehow equals Gronk's equals his output by putting up a stone cold zero.
Yeah, not great.
Now it's interesting though. What do you see as now? You know, assuming they're going to have McCown as a quarterback, which I'm like 95% sure they are. What does that does it? Barnage puts up a zero, but are we going to end up changing his projection because of that zero, or are we going to leave it as is? He was a guy we loved, and he didn't do anything, but now the situation has changed. How do you see that now?
Well, it's kind of weird because, the situation, I mean, on FanDuel, you have to pay $6,000 for him. That's probably a little bit too speculative. I think that probably we should move his guidance downward a little bit, but I still think, I mean, DraftKings, he's 4,000. I think that there's a good chance he slides right back into the role he was in last year with McCown back under center. It's really hard for a guy to go out there and get a zero, though. It's like, you know, RG3, as bad as he was, like, they at least practiced together, you know? Like, the coach has probably told him, like, hey, this guy was really good for us last year or whatever. It's really, I don't know. It's pretty disconcerting. I will say he should have tremendous upside for week two against Baltimore. And I can definitely see playing him. I mean, tight end in general was just awful in week one. So
yeah. It's
kind of like you're picking among, you know, pigs or whatever. But I think that, I'm much more bullish about him than I would be if RG3 were back for sure. I'm still not sure if I'll be able to stomach it for cash games is where I'm at right now.
Yeah, probably. You're right on the tight ends, just really not anyone rising to the top. Bennett came in and started, didn't really do much. Ertz didn't really do much. Barnage put up a zero. Jordan Reed was looking very, very good early, and then his targets just kind of dropped off in the second half, even though they were playing from behind the Redskins last night. So really, for tight ends, it was a Fleener didn't do anything. Yeah, tight end was a hard nut to crack. There was a couple really cheap guys that ended up hitting value, but those weren't really guys anyone was really considering going into the week, so I can't even look at some of these other like really cheap guys and say, hey, you know, this is the guy going to be this week. I'm willing to just stay the course on some of the projections we have for a lot of these guys and just hope that it comes out where historical targets and volume play out going forward. It just didn't seem to be totally the case this week.
Yeah, so let's talk about some guys, some big winners and losers in the targets department, because I think this is pretty interesting for week one, because I think we actually do learn a lot, like especially on the extreme end. So going on the top of the list for week one, Allen Robinson tops the week with 15 targets. No real surprise there. I mean, he was Bortles' favorite target last year. Looks like the Jags will be playing from behind a lot again. So, you know, he had the fumble and only wound up pulling in 72 yards, but 15 targets is super, super elite. And while he's not going to convert as many of those into catches as some, just by the nature of his, you know, the routes he runs and the fact that he runs deep balls and stuff like that, he won't be like some of the other guys who can get 9 catches on 11 targets, like Antonio Brown or whoever. But yeah, Robinson to me might be moving into that top target category and looking for some big games. But then there were some surprising names that right underneath him. So tell me about these two guys, Jason Witten and Jordan Matthews, tying at 14 targets. What do you think about those two guys and their new situations?
New quarterback situations, right? Okay, yeah. So you know, I watched a little bit more of that Eagles game than I wanted to, and it was so funny because the Matthews, it's so hard to trust either thing as being a real thing. First of all, I would never project either guy at 14 targets. I wouldn't even project either guy at 10 targets, I don't think, going forward. I don't think so. Mostly because it's still so speculative. It's because some of these things can be, I don't know enough about schemes and like different defensive schemes to understand totally if all targets are created equally, right? So this would be a situation where I'd probably be a little bit more inclined to think that Matthews' targets are real than Witten's, because Matthews is the WR1 there, and Witten is definitely just behind like guys like Dez in terms of where Dak should be looking on a game-to-game basis.
But is he, though, because the thing about Prescott and the way the Cowboys used him in week one is they were clearly, I think, just rolling out a pretty conservative game plan for him, right? I mean, if Dez is going to be running downfield and running more aggressive routes, and that's kind of where his skills lie, then maybe Witten just becomes a safety blanket for Prescott until he gets his sea legs under him. I don't think we should protect him for 10 targets probably, but he looks pretty clearly like a guy who's moving to the top of that tight end category.
Yeah, you're probably right. Again, Witten's like a guy, right? So it's not we had him for around 6 targets last week. I would say that is definitely too low going forward. So he will definitely come up. This is where we always we have lots of discussions on everybody, and we'll spend most of the rest of the day just really drilling down on every team and thinking about, mm-hmm. Where are we correct and where we're not. Witten's definitely a guy that we will bring up because you're for all the reasons you just mentioned. Matthews, it's funny. We had him at about 8 targets. I'm comfortable maybe bringing it up a little bit, but not tons going forward, just because we're still in a somewhat unknown situation with Wentz. He was fine game one, but this is still just a rookie quarterback, right? And so I don't know. It's going to require a deeper dive for me. It's interesting that they top the targets list, and I knew Matthews had been targeted a lot. I did not realize that Witten had been targeted that much.
Yeah, and I think we don't want to be too quick to totally radically change all of our assumptions, but I think in those two guys, really unexpected big jumps. And Matthews was the WR1 for the Eagles last season, but a rookie quarterback. I mean, they both have rookie quarterbacks, and I think rookie quarterbacks, probably more than more advanced quarterbacks like Tom Brady, whoever, are going to look at their first option more frequently. So the indication to me is that these are the first targets for both of these guys, and we could see big seasons from them going forward.
Yeah, and along that safety valve line with Dak and Witten, the next highest target guy was Cole Beasley at 12. And so he's another guy that's running underneath routes, which 26 of Dak's 45 attempts went to Witten and Beasley. So, well more than half of the passes thrown. And those are, without having just tracked the entire game, my guess is those are pretty short passes. the average, yards per catch was really short. Those are guys that run a lot of underneath routes. Beasley is from the slot. So that could just be
Beasley caught 5 first downs. So if they're going to use him as a possession guy, and I think Dez might be the odd man out here. We talked about going into week one how rookie quarterbacks affect the skill position guys. I think what we're seeing here is that, and I'm sure they'll find a way to use Dez. He's a transcendent talent, and they'll give Prescott a longer leash as the season goes along. But yeah, definitely, I think Beasley's a guy. Also, running short routes indicates that he's probably a reasonable red zone target for them as well. So definitely something to keep an eye on.
Give me a couple other targets.
All right, more big winners. So, yeah. And these, I think we really learned a lot week one, so I'm excited. Hopefully you can hear my excitement. So another big one was Kelvin Benjamin. He's a guy we talked about coming back after a missed season. One of Cam's favorite targets in his rookie season. There was a lot of Devin Funchess buzz going into camp. And Benjamin went right back out there, 12 targets, 91 yards and a touch. I think that he's a real deal. He's going to be a value and a guy that could be moving into true wide receiver one territory going forward. I mean, 7,500 on FanDuel is not exactly where you want to be for a bargains type guy. But again, I could see him being in the 8,000s later in the season. Still, for me, probably more of a big tournament play just because you're not really getting away with anything playing a guy like that at 7,500. But there are a couple guys I think you are getting away with. So, these are guys, either young guys, new teams, new quarterbacks that we're very bullish on coming into week two. So the first one, I think, is Tajae Sharpe. We mentioned him. Went out there 11 targets, 7 catches, 76 yards. He was a guy getting preseason buzz. And when the preseason buzz lines up with a solid week one performance, then I think we're a lot more interested, right?
Yep.
So while he didn't get in the end zone, that actually might be a good thing for his price because, just not getting in the end zone means he only scored – how many points is this? 14 and a half points on DraftKings. I think that will be something like his floor in the future. And he's still just super, super affordable. And then there's 2 more speculative guys. So I want to get your thoughts on these guys. Again, 2 guys, young guys with new situations. So there's Jeremy Curley, 11 targets, 7 receptions on San Francisco. So a top 10 targets, guys, as many targets as Antonio Brown. And then there was Will Fuller for the Texans there, 5 receptions for 107 yards and a touch with Brock Osweiler under center. So what are you thinking about those 2 guys?
Well, it's funny. With Fuller, was a preseason buzz guy and comes out of college. He was great at Notre Dame. And so he's just a real talent guy. And I'm always a little bit more attracted to the pedigree guys. The problem with Fuller being that he's just not the guy on that team. And so this is what happens with teams, right? So sometimes you see guys like, Mohamed Sanu get a lot of targets until their team realizes they're like, well, our goal was to just shut Julio Jones down, but now this other guy's killing us. So we just simply cannot maintain the same strategy because it's, you know, pick your poison. We're just going to get killed by one of them. So you see the targets kind of trend back the other direction. I'm not positive that is what happens with Fuller here. He's very good, and I'm just a little concerned about Houston's overall offense, and I'm concerned that he's just not the guy. He's a guy that I would definitely will definitely bring up his projection, because he was a sort of wait-and-see candidate for us on in terms of let's just see how they use him. I'm not totally sold. He's just going to see this kind of volume on a week-to-week basis. And Curley's problem is – I know San Francisco won last night. I'm a little confused about
it. They won in crushing fashion.
Well, they did. The Rams might just be so bad, though. It's like hard to know exactly.
Yeah, they might be a new kind of bad.
Right. And so, they looked so bad. And that's one of those ones where I'm like, well, was it that Blaine Gabbert is, shredding the defense with Curley? And he did look fine, right?
He wasn't shredding the defense. But the thing is, if Gabbert's going to throw 35 times in a 28-0 win, he's got to throw the ball to somebody, right? And if you look at these other names, Curley is not
Torrey
Smith, transcendent talent or anything, but Quentin Patton, Sean Drawn, these guys are not going to be.
Torrey Smith was a guy I kind of liked going in, and he just didn't really look his way, and that ended
didn't
up
happen.
The problem,
yeah,
right?
He got
so
six targets, and again, Torrey Smith is a guy who's going to see more action in close games and games from behind, just because his plan is to outrun the defense and catch long balls. But the Gabbert's never really been a guy to connect on the long ball either, so. I think Curley, you're not going to go out and just put Curley in your cash games or anything like that, but he's a guy you got to keep an eye on. One thing to your point, too, is it's really going to be an unusual game script for San Francisco. They're not going to win by 28 points again this season. So
no.
Carlos Hyde's a guy we'll talk about in the carries section, but I think it's pretty tough to learn too much about what San Francisco is going to do from this game.
That's kind of where I am with Curley, right? He's a guy that's kind of been around. No team seems to really want him, right? there's a reason for some of these things. Look,
sure, but we'll highlight him in green in the sheet, and if he gets 10 targets again next week, then he might start to be a really interesting guy.
One other situation I want to bring up from the wide receiver standpoint, this one's a little heartbreaking, tough to talk about. We were, I would say, one of the few industry outfits that was really high on Keenan Allen going into this week. We actually, to the point where we played him in cash lineups, and that was looking so great. He was 6-for-63 in the first, quarter and a half of the game, and it didn't look like there was going to be any change coming. That was just Rivers' plan. And that was a carryover from last year when Allen played, where he was just – he would have some games where that was all Rivers would do. And it was really heading that direction.
Targets.
Right. It was heading that direction, and unfortunately he tears his ACL. It was brutal to watch. Just from being a fan standpoint, it's really just terrible. He was crying as he got carted off the field. It was really hard to watch. It was also hard to see that was a really underwhelmed guy that we had that was looking like he was headed for a great day, and he gets hurt. Now, the situation –
I'm not sure if it was harder on him or me, just to throw that
I would
out there.
Put it as I put that as a push. It was pretty hard. it was pretty hard.
I essentially had to be carted out of our family get together that we had over here when you sent me that text. So
yeah.
I went down, I was crying, I couldn't look,
the reason I'm asking is this.
We try to figure out who do you think this opens up a window for?
I don't know.
Gates,
Travis Benjamin, maybe the reason we loved Allen especially was because he was so clear cut above their other options in the receiving game also. So it wasn't just his talent thing. It was, there's a pretty steep drop off for the Chargers after him. So they'll throw out in the backfield to Woodhead for sure. He did target Gates. This is one where
Travis Benjamin 8 targets.
That's why I brought him up.
7-for-32 yards.
Yeah, so. He's just not. Yeah. This is a huge downgrade for San Diego. But they are a team that likes to throw, and Rivers is a pretty accurate passer, and so someone stands to benefit from Allen's dismissal. Not dismissal. Jeez, that's the wrong word. From his injury. So Benjamin's targets are there, but the yards, I don't know. Woodhead's kind of the same problem. It's really difficult to roster receiving running backs like Woodhead. You really cannot do it in cash games. It's so speculative. So I wonder if we just end up falling sort of in the middle on all these guys, and one of them will maybe break out, and we're just going to have to hope that it's the guy that kind of climbs to the top for us in terms of targets.
And frankly, none of those guys are that cheap to where, if Travis Benjamin were 300 on DraftKings, maybe you could look at him and say,
if he was 300, we would play him no matter
300,
what.
300, I would definitely. 3,000. If he were 3,000 on DraftKings, then I think you're in the neighborhood of saying, all he's got to do is just go out there and catch 6 balls. Doesn't matter what happens after that. But given that he's 4,400, there's probably just better value there. So,
well, he falls into that category of Will Fuller is 4,200, Tajay Sharpe is 4,100.
Give me Will Fuller or Tajay Sharpe,
right?
Any day.
Exactly, and so you end up becoming sort of in that situation with those guys, and then the list kind of gets worse from there. But, and then the final.
All right, so let's do a couple other big winners and losers from this first week, because I think this is going to be the most useful thing for people. I think just because, you know, quarterbacks, there's some interesting news there, but. Wide receivers and running backs, I think, was where a lot of the action happened. Another guy everyone was kind of had their eye on was Marvin Jones. I think some people will misanalyze this situation and say 4 receptions, 85 yards, maybe got a little bit lucky, but the 10 targets there, still very solid. Another situation we had a tough time breaking down going into week one was the Cardinals situation. Larry Fitzgerald rises to the pack there, to the top of the pack, rather. 8 catches on 10 targets for 81 yards and 2 touchdowns. So they're continuing to look his way in the red zone. Could definitely be a potential guy that winds up just having another, you know, ageless sort of great season. Around the top of the list, AJ Green was phenomenal. We knew he was going to be good, but, you know, combining the tons of targets with catching basically all of them.
Yeah, well, 12 for 13, right? Like, you're not going to go 12 for 13 on converting targets.
That's going to be tough. But still, even the 13 targets is super elite, and the fact that he did the most with his targets counts for something, right?
Yep.
Like, if you look at the guys in the top 10, Robinson, Witten, Matthews, Green, T.Y. Hilton's a guy we can talk about in a second, but Cole Beasley, Tavon Austin, who did absolutely nothing but had a bunch of targets, should be interesting going forward. But Kelvin Benjamin, Antonio Brown, and Jeremy Curley, like AJ Green is the other big pedigree guy there. And, you know, when we're talking about DeAndre Hopkins, who got out targeted by Will Fuller, or Julio Jones, who got out targeted by Mohamed Sanu, it's nice to see Green being the clear number one guy on his team, at least for safety reasons. So I find that pretty noteworthy.
Yeah, no, I think I'm with you. I think for the most part, we were, like I said, some of these guys will jump out and some people may end up being a little bit more bullish on them going forward because they're going to look at that first game and say, oh yeah, like AJ Green, this guy is like in that next level. And I'm just like not sure that's still totally the case for him. And I'm all about situations.
You're not sure.
I think he's just fine. Let me rephrase. He's very, very, very good. He's an elite wide receiver. I would still almost definitely take the guys like the Julio Joneses and Antonio Browns of the world over him just because I still just think that they are a next level above. And so that's all.
How about Odell Beckham?
I would. It's hard. I haven't looked at all of our projections for this week.
4 receptions for 8 targets for 73 yards for Beckham.
I would take Beckham. Against.
All right. So that's time to talk about one of our sponsors. Yeah. So this is nohalftime.com. If you haven't heard about nohalftime.com, they are an app that you can use for one-on-one fantasy challenges. So the way it works is you choose a player and you issue a challenge to the world by saying. So in this case, you could say, I like AJ Green better than Odell Beckham Jr. for week 2. And I just enter that into the app very, very easily. And then fish like Doug can go around and say, AJ Green, that guy's lucky. I'll take Odell Beckham over him. Well, he'll choose Odell Beckham. And then, you know, whoever scores more fantasy points gets the money. You can use promo code DFSR25 to get up to a $25 bonus on 100% of your buy-in and make challenges right now. You can also troll around for fish who put in challenges. Like if some moron out there says Odell Beckham's going to outscore AJ Green and issues that challenge to nohalftime.com, then you can accept that challenge and go from there. A lot of profitable challenges out there every week. Great app, great interface. Love No Halftime. So moving on, I think the No Halftime challenge to start here has got to be Beckham versus Green. I love Beckham. I love Green. The 13 targets, Andy Dalton loves him. Odell Beckham Jr., kind of erratic. I'll take him all day.
I think, you know, it's going to be, just as a note, on FanDuel, we have Beckham projected right now. We haven't done a total deep dive on all these guys yet, but we have him projected for 17.73 points and Green 17.33 points. So they're essentially tied in the system.
Sure, and that's before we've adjusted things based on week one information.
Right. Now, Beckham obviously doesn't have much of a game. That was sort of in line with what had happened to him when they played the Cowboys last year, where he just didn't seem to get the ball that much. This week, he plays the Saints, which is a totally different story.
Yeah, phenomenal
matchup in terms of defense. It's really the kind of matchup you want to have when you're a receiver is to play the Saints. You know, the Raiders carved them up last week. So, I'm going to stick with Beckham here, though it is actually closer in our system than I thought it was going to be when I instantly said Beckham. So, it's
That's all good. Mostly I just wanted to get an excuse.
You did a great job.
run out of the no halftime challenge thing. So, yeah, moving along. How about any big losers at the wide receiver position for week one? Anyone jump into mind for you as someone who, you know, really let the world down or really underperformed as to expectations?
I mean, clearly Julio Jones only gets 8 targets in the first game, which is maybe...
And he had like 1 through a quarter and a half.
Yeah, maybe that's... we said we melted down. That's a little concerning, though, for him. I'm willing to just kind of roll with what we originally thought was the case with him and targets going forward. They have a little bit of a different situation with Sanu there, but they also have had other wide receiver twos around in the past that have sort of, have cut into him. So I'm fine keeping the projection on Jones that we went into last week with, just in terms of overall volume. I haven't really looked in too much of his matchup. He faces Oakland. So there's a couple of these guys have, again, great matchups. Jones gets the Raiders, and mm-hmm. Beckham gets the Saints, and that's kind of where you want to be when you're a wide receiver. So I think
you're right on. I think keeping a steady hand on those guys and not panicking, and not like you would never want to take Jordan Matthews over Odell Beckham Jr. in a no halftime challenge, right?
No. So. I mean, we still have Jones. For what it's worth, right now on DraftKings, we have Jones projected for 5 total points than Beckham, and 5 more points than Green. I'm fine keeping it that way, to be perfectly honest, just because, Green might end up coming up a little bit if we think that there's just going to be more balls coming his direction now because they don't have as much in the passing game anymore with the aforementioned Sanu no longer being there. So it's going to be close, but Jones is just – he and Brown are just in that cut above, and I'm just totally fine keeping them there. Not a ton for me. We were pretty high on Willie Snead going in. He lived up to what we thought was going to sort of happen with him. We talked about the difference with him in the starting lineup as opposed to coming off the bench last year.
Yeah, you nailed that, buddy.
And exactly happened. We had him for about 8 targets. He gets 9 targets. Clearly he converted all of them. And turning 9 targets into 172 in a touch is just not going to happen all the time. But the volume is the thing that I look to there. And he and Cooks basically
split. Sure,
Brandon
Cooks also amazing, by the way.
Well, this is what happens when you play the Raiders.
9 targets.
And this is what happens when you play the Raiders. So that's the old Julio Jones thing again, right? So there could be enough for Jones and Sanu again this week, just because the Raiders just have trouble in the passing game and doesn't stand a reason that they're
going to
make a change.
Yeah, they had to sit their quarterback. I mean, the thing about Jones, I'm a little bit concerned about. He is listed as questionable for week 2. He says he's going to play, but the ankle injury thing, just, I don't know. If you're picking wide receiver ones, and with the ambiguous new world of NFL injury stuff, I could see that being a stay away for some people. So
final one, let's touch on one final thing that I think most people were surprised and shocked about. The Patriots go into Arizona and beat the Cardinals with Garoppolo, no Gronk, and just kind of a team of dudes. Is this a situation where are we looking at any Patriots now? What do you feel about the Patriots situation going forward? Some of their guys are still coming a little bit on the cheaper side. They beat a good team. Somehow, I just don't even know how they do these things. But this week they go into Miami. What are you looking at when it comes to the Patriots this week?
So I think the big winner from this game, and this is actually a good segue because we're going to talk about running backs in a little bit anyway, is LeGarrette Blount. The Patriots have always been really erratic at the running back position, and it looks like they're ready to settle in and marry LeGarrette Blount.
They have you right where they want you.
I know. But, 22 carries and 70 yards is not phenomenal, but against a pretty solid defense, I think that's what you're looking for. Got the goal line carries. Blount, it was 4,000 on DraftKings for week 2, so I suspect that on that usage, he's going to move to the top of our system. 6,000 on FanDuel, so a little bit more expensive, but if he's the feature back on a team that doesn't stink, apparently, then I could see him doing it. And particularly just because in the passing game, they spread the ball around so much that I don't think you're going to think about any Patriots on the passing side, right? So that's kind of where my head's at right now.
Yeah, no, they're interesting. It's so crazy. It's just so unbelievable. It seems like they can just kind of play anybody and win. I just don't. At this point, it's just they've thrown every conventional idea about who you need to even have on the field to win football games. I think I'm with you. The thing with Blount is what really helps Blount, obviously, here is that they probably still cannot feel totally comfortable about dropping Garoppolo back and throwing 40 passes a game or something like that. And
I don't think they ever will, by the way. I think they're just going to play it safe. They stole a win. They're just trying to make the playoffs, I imagine. So We're going to see a lot of Blunt going forward.
Yeah, no, I agree with you. Well, he's a guy whose projection will get boosted up as we move in through updating our season or our week two projections. Anyone else that give me anyone else that you liked at running back or things that stood out to you from the running back position?
Sure. Well, I think mostly we just learned a lot. So the top two guys at attempts for the season so far after one game are Lamar Miller, D'Angelo Williams. No surprise to us. I mean, they were actually the subject, the guys we were both most bullish on going into week one. You liked Miller, I liked Williams. Miller actually out-carried Williams at 28 attempts in week one. So your point about Houston's culture of smashing their lead backs fully came through, so kudos to you on that. He did fumble the ball once. The overall line wasn't phenomenal, but there's no reason to think he won't continue with that kind of workload going forward until he breaks down inevitably, but right. Hopefully that won't be in week two. Some other big names, like the carries list, I think is really interesting because it's just not guys anyone would have put down for the first week. Mm-hmm. So we can go through them. We talked about Carlos Hyde just a little bit in that San Francisco game. Again, really unusual game script for San Francisco. So probably more like a wait and see guy. But if you ever get a game where San Francisco is favored or the game is close, he's probably a pretty solid value play. But then the next two guys I thought were really interesting, and that's Matt Forte and Ryan Matthews. Both guys, you know, moving into sort of new roles. Forte in particular. Forte, 22 carries in his very first week. What do you think about Forte?
Yeah, he wasn't a guy that I hadn't really noticed it too much, and he was sort of speculative going in, switches teams. You're not sure how the Jets are going to use him. There were some injury concerns going into week one. There, it stands to reason that they would want to continue sort of like that ground and pound thing. They have a couple good possession receivers that are able to sort of fit in with that mold, and Forte is so good out of the backfield catching the ball.
He continue with that. 5 receptions, 59 yards receiving.
Too. Right. He's a guy that if you think that right, because he's like not Chris Ivory, right, who they were using last year. And they just could be so much more incentivized to play him every down, especially with the way Fitzpatrick is pretty accurate passer. So no, I like it. I think that's probably a real thing for them going forward. And he's a guy whose projection might probably tick up a little bit over what we had him for.
I mean, he's going to be too expensive on DraftKings, I think, 6,600. But at FanDuel, where he's 6,800, and if you don't know, they have just different pricing models. So 6,800 on FanDuel is much cheaper than 6,600 on DraftKings. But yeah, I mean, especially if he's going to catch balls out of the backfield, you know, maybe you can talk yourself into him for a big tournament, even on DraftKings. How about Matthews on Philadelphia? What do you?
Well, he's another one because that's a coaching change, and you know they have a new coach. It was again we were just unclear about what their plan was going to be. Their plan of action was going to be going in. Like we knew how Chip Kelly ran the Eagles, but it was just totally unclear about what Peterson would do calling the shots. So they, again, are probably incentivized to continue with this because you need to limit the amount of exposure you have to Wentz in the offensive game.
They're going to need to set up the running game first to open up the holes for Wentz, theoretically.
Exactly. And so if you think that that's the case for him, and you know he was a guy that some people were pretty bullish on because he was just going to be that running back one for them now. They weren't going to split really any carries with him. That seems to be the case. I'm realizing something's up with our projections on him because it's really, really low. He gets that – so I need to look at what happened there. But he gets Chicago, who was able to somewhat contain Miller last week because of just – you know, their run defense isn't so horrible. But if you think the volume is going to be there for him and you think that the Eagles are just going to need to establish that running game, I don't mind it.
Yeah, I'm with you. Another big change of situation guy was T.J. Yeldon for week one. You know, your brother-in-law, our old college football writer, Casey, was trying to get us on the Yeldon train going into week one, saying Chris Ivory was going to be out, that he was going to be the guy. We looked into it, didn't really feel like the opportunity was quite what Casey was putting forward, but turns out the opportunity was there. He just didn't do anything with it. But in your mind, is Yeldon a value guy? I mean, the 1.9 yards per carry is not phenomenal.
No.
Might speak to some endemic issues there, but are you interested at all in T.J. Yeldon if he's the sort of the true feature back in Jacksonville?
I mean, it's Jacksonville. I still feel like they stink. The problem is, well, with him is that they play the Chargers this week. Chargers are really no great shakes either, so especially on defense.
Right, yeah, we just saw Spencer Ware cut them up on 18 touches, right?
So. Right. The game's, opens at Chargers -3, which means even in San Diego, Vegas isn't so confident that they're that much better at all than Jacksonville. So I guess he's kind of a guy. I mean, I kind of think he's just not very good, but
with you. I mean, 21 carries and 4 receptions is what you want to see out of a dirt cheap running back, right? But yeah, it's speculative. I mean, it doesn't feel as good to me as some other guys in similar price ranges. So that could change going forward. And obviously, we still need to hear that Ivory's out. Obviously, if Ivory's back, this is a complete stay away. But he might be a big tournament guy. I mean, we have definitely seen cases in the past where guys convert 25 touches into outsized performances. So a guy to have you on your radar for big tournaments anyway.
No, I'm with you. Anyone else before we close it out, running backs that kind of stood out to you this week?
And yeah, well, I've got a couple more. Well, one more breakout guy and then a couple questions I had about disappointing guys. Because I know we got places to be, man. So I'm going to be sensitive to that.
We got to figure out why Ryan Matthews' projection is so low. So I do have things. I've got things to do here.
So C.J. Anderson, another guy that, you know, people were not quite sure how that would shake out. New quarterback, obviously, and Trevor Siemian. But we knew Denver was going to want to run the ball, right? What do you think about C.J. Anderson's week one performance?
I mean, he has a couple things gifted to him going forward, right? He gets the ball. It looks like they're, you know, sort of in that same, like, rookie quarterback, we need to play it safe mold. Like, he has the same kind of thing we said with Ryan Matthews, where teams just, like, Trevor Siemian's just not very good. So, again.
Doesn't seem like it.
No. And so.
He got a lot of praise, by the way, by the announcers in that game. It's like they really tried to bend over backwards to talk about, you know, it's almost like in a condescending, like, when you watch a kid play mini golf and they get like a hole in four instead of a hole in six or something.
Well,
like,
you know, it's a really,
oh my gosh, you got a hole in four.
A pretty big indictment for me. And I don't like to translate this totally because it's just not correct. Like, you make the point, like, everyone that's in the NFL was good in college. Like, Trevin Siemian wasn't even that good in college. Like, he was a guy, we played a ton of college football DFS last year. And with Northwestern, we never even, but really, I think, ever really considered starting him in college in DFS, right? And so, like, I don't know. It's just like and that really doesn't tell the whole story on a guy, of course. I mean, the things don't translate, but that's like, does sort of stick in my head with him. I'm like, just like, I was a loser in college, kind of, like from a fantasy standpoint. Anyway,
we're not going to play Siemian, but I do think Anderson, 137, I think 139 total yards. The two touchdowns. I think he's the real deal going forward.
Oh, and he gets a great matchup. They play the Colts this week. They play the Colts this week. Denver's already minus six. That's exactly where you want to be in terms of running backs. So if you think that he's going to be like that 20-plus touch guy, and they just probably should because of Siemian, then yeah, that's a guy that really
consider it. Well, this brings me to a bigger question, because one of the things, you know, that we did steer our users and our listeners away from week one was paying up at the running back position. Anderson is creeping dangerously at paying up range, you know, 7,800 on FanDuel. And, you know, of course, we recommended guys in a tier just below that, and Miller and Williams last week, who were terrific. But big disappointments from week one. Peterson and basically all the guys, all the big guys from last season were bad, right? Peterson, Gurley, and Martin. What are you thinking about any of those three guys? Are you worried about their performance going forward?
Their teams
are bad. Do you
still
feel like they're safe?
Yeah, their team. It's their team problem. They have team problems, right? like Peterson. I mean, maybe things change a little bit with Bradford. I'm not sure. The Rams look like a total mess. Like I just can't. I don't know why a team wouldn't just play, you know, whatever the term is for how many guys you should stand on the offensive line or defensive line against a team. Like, I don't know. The Rams simply cannot hurt you any other way. That really cuts into Gurley's value. Yeah. I think going
and
forward,
guys in the box or whatever.
Doug Martin is. I'm not willing to change Martin at all. I think he's just, you know, that could just be a game, you know, and we see him maybe bounce back against Arizona this week. We saw Blunt was able to do some stuff against that Arizona run defense. So Doug Martin's not really, I'm not as worried about him, but also don't put them in the same tier. Like he's not in Gurley and Peterson's tier. I would be really concerned. I just don't think, I don't know why you'd be paying up for those guys at this point. Just because their teams are just, I mean, Gurley plays Seattle this week, so forget it anyway. Mm-hmm. But yeah, I don't know. I'd be more worried about the team situation.
Yeah, I think that's fair. And then the last situation I wanted to break down, and I'm sure we'll break down more going forward later in the week, but this is a situation for the Chargers. So the Chargers did a really weird thing week one where they carried the ball 30 times out of the backfield, and they split it almost exactly between Danny Woodhead and Melvin Gordon. So Melvin Gordon got the goal line carries, annoyingly, and Woodhead got more, and Woodhead was far more featured in the passing game. Are either of those guys people you want to consider for any sort of DFS format going forward, or does the split nature of that situation just make it a stay away for you?
For cash, definitely no. It's too strikes me too much as like the hot hand sort of situation that I just don't want to try to guess. Now, they didn't do that this week because they split it down the middle, but I am just not willing to really go in that direction. Yeah, them losing Allen definitely hurts them in the passing game. It's going to be easier to sort of gear up on the running game for them.
To that point, what about Woodhead? I mean, Woodhead on DraftKings, 5,200 this week, caught five balls out of the backfield last week, most of those after Allen went down. is Woodhead a guy you can even consider? I mean, if he's going to catch five balls, he's at 5 points to start the game on DraftKings, right? So do we, I mean, is he, can he be considered safe if he's going to catch five balls in the game, or is it just still too spec-free?
There's historical stuff to suggest that that's just not a new thing for him, right? He does catch passes. I mean. And so, yeah, maybe. It feels awful paying 5,200 on DraftKings. To, like, I'm speaking strictly about cash games. What I was going to say was, to me, they make great tournament plays because they're both around the same price. You can actually make the same team and just use one or the other, and you figure you get – You know, if you figure they're going to score points and this is going to be where they go volume wise, and you can just maybe get the touchdowns out of one of them, they're almost even swaps on DraftKings. So making tournament teams with both strike me as a correct thing to do, especially and also like possibly pairing them with Rivers, but or one of those cheap like just loser wide receivers that they have now and
right,
hope
just
that,
in case.
Yeah, exactly. Again, that's like a three a quarterback, running back, wide receiver stack that you can definitely fit into your
money. You got to go Woodhead in that scenario though, because you're going to get all the your hope there is it's they throw all passes and Woodhead gets receiving.
Now, but for some reason, running backs that are so pass heavy, and that's really and I guess Woodhead got 15 carries, but they just it just worries me a little bit. And if he was 3,000, yes. If he's 5,200, it's not a thing that I can
I don't
trot
know.
Out their
I'm,
safety.
I think I'm more interested in than you are. End of the year last year, Woodhead had 6 targets, 10 targets, 10 targets for 22 total receptions in the last three games. I can see them, and I was obviously with no Keenan Allen. I can see them moving more in the direction. The fact that they gave him 16 carries to me makes him a consideration, maybe in all formats on DraftKings. To be honest with you, I'll have to break down exactly how. You know, I we're just speaking off the cuff. We haven't actually fully updated the system for next week yet, but I don't know. I think he's interesting. I think you could see him move into. Being the guy that we are higher on than most people.
I can see that. Maybe my, you know, by Thursday morning when we record our podcast for picks, for value picks this week, I may have a totally different opinion. I'll take a wait and see on that one.
Yeah, man. So I think before we head out, we do have one more advertiser I wanted to throw out there. And these guys are a new site running contests, especially if you're overwhelmed by the huge contests on DraftKings and FanDuel, and you don't really like being in a sea of 2 million players trying to win $1 million / everyone loses in those situations. And that's fantasyfactor.com. So fantasyfactor.com, relatively new to the scene. They have small contests. They do have guarantees and some overlay for week one. And I imagine they'll probably have some overlay for week two as well. But by using promo code DFSR, you can get just a straight up $5 to play with. So this isn't the conventional drip bonus you can get on other sites. You just deposit, they'll give you $5. You enter a contest, see how you do for week one. Really, really nice site, slick interface, good guys over there. I know them from the online poker space. So they do what they say, and I think that they'll be around for the long term just because, you know, they're not being super overambitious with $10,000 overlays in their first contests or whatever. So fantasyfactor.com if you want to just play against other players who aren't the pros putting in 50 lineups in every contest. I think that's a good place to look. So
right on, brother. I think we learned a lot from week one. I think we're going to learn a lot more when we really start taking the deep dive now, which we're going to do as soon as we stop recording here, figure out if we're, you know, where some of that volume is going to go, what was real from week one, what was not. And I think I'm just really, really encouraged as we're coming out of this first week. You know, our users were loving it. Cashing and cash games kind of across the board. And ready for week two to start. We will talk to you. I'll talk to you again on Thursday, buddy.
Until then, remember it's DavisFantasySportsRankings.com. You go to DavisFantasySportsRankings.com and you can get a free trial to our membership, which gives you access to our player lab and all of our other things, projections for week two, free 3-day trial.
Did you say Davis Fantasy Sports Rankings? Like James Davis?
Yeah, you've seen the logo, the D on Twitter, Davis Fantasy Sports Rankings, as in James Davis. That's
Do I
me.
Need to stop recording? I'm going to stop recording here. Hold on a second.
No, you go to the website.
I just typed it in. You bought that URL. You're such a loser.
I did buy the URL on our budget. I hope that was all right. So people have asked us in the chat. They see the D come up, and people are always like, hey, Doug, what's happening, man, when they see the D logo come in. And I have to remind them that I'm not Doug. And one of the users suggested that the D could stand for Davis. And so
I'm dying.
Went ahead and made sure to redirect DavisFantasySportsRankings.com for the future.
So you can go to DavisFantasySportsRankings.com or you can go to Daily Fantasy.
That's correct.
I'm not even going to do it. All right. I'll talk to you again on Thursday, buddy.
All right, buddy. Adios.